Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You heard the Miranda rights, then they're read to suspects on those TV cop shows. It says you have the right to remain silent. And then it goes on to say you have the right to an attorney. And if you can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you. But what does it actually entail? If it's a public defender, that's not much of an attorney in some cases in Texas because they are overworked and underpaid, and they work at the mercy of judges. Many say the system is broken. We learned more about that in a recent article by Nina Satija. She is an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. Her article, How the Unchecked Power of Judges is Hurting Poor Texans, appeared in the September issue of Texas Monthly. And Nina, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So it's interesting about your story because we've covered some of the problems with public defenders in the past is that you are isolating the issue with judges and how judges have so much authority over which attorney gets appointed to which cases and who gets frozen out. So why do judges have so much authority in these public defenders?
Well, it really goes back to, our history and our Constitution. And it's not just the case in Texas. It's the case in many other states. It's also the case, by the way, in the federal judiciary system, in the federal criminal justice system. Judges are the primary actors responsible for overseeing indigent defense. And so they oversee the attorneys. They're responsible for overseeing how the attorneys are doing, deciding who gets cases, deciding how much they get paid. Written into Texas law and I believe also into the Texas Constitution. But one thing just to be careful about in framing this is that, the issue is actually, at least what that I wrote about, is not so much about public defenders who are government-salaried lawyers that defend those who can't pay for a lawyer, but actually court-appointed lawyers. Court-appointed lawyers are, essentially private contractors. They're private attorneys in the area who get paid maybe usually a flat fee per case to represent the poor. And so that's really what I'm talking about here. The argument actually is if there were a public defender's office, that could be more independent from judges and would have less of those problems.
So Nina, when I've spoken to people in the jail and about their experiences, they say they didn't ever even get to meet their court-appointed attorney until right before they went to trial. I mean, like immediately after, like in the hallway. And that attorney, the only thing that came out of their mouth was like, take this plea deal. There's this expression you'll hear in the courthouse, which is a plead 'em and bleed 'em. Don't even really, just get the plea deal. And then the court-appointed attorney gets their $200 and you go to jail.
Yeah, I think that's often that's often the experience of many of the folks that I spoke to and often the observations that I saw as well in court. Looking at how court-appointed attorneys were representing their clients. That's not necessarily, all court-appointed attorneys. I've talked to a lot of people who think, though, that it is the majority, and the incentives are really perverse. They're getting paid a flat fee per case, as you brought up. In many jurisdictions, they're not paid for any extra work that they do on the case beyond their court appearances, so they have no financial incentive to go visit their client in jail or really communicate with their client at all. They're not making any money for that. They're not generally getting paid by the hour. And so that's really the problem. And that's also true, to be fair, at public defender's offices, where lawyers are underpaid and understaffed. So it can happen at a public defender's office. It can happen to a court-appointed lawyer. In Texas, it's often happening, in part because there's not enough funding and there are no caseload limits implemented on these lawyers. Lawyers can take as many cases, the maximum caseload they have is just extraordinarily high. One exception to that is in the Harris County Public Defender's Office. They have very strict caseload limits there, and data has already shown that they do a better job representing their clients than the typical court-appointed lawyer in Harris County, where there are basically no caseload limits right now.
Now, the argument is if we were to provide public defenders, real public defenders with reasonable caseloads in Texas, that it would be very expensive. But I wonder if there's a counter argument that would say if we were able to provide individuals a qualified, engaged attorney defending them, that we would be able to keep more people out of our jails and there would be maybe it would offset each other.
That is certainly the argument that a lot of advocates and experts have made, that it's not going to cost as much money as you think because less people are going to spend as much time in jail. I think the other thing, though, to be clear about here, though, is that, and that was the point that I really felt was important about the story, is that this isn't just about money. Even if you had all the money in the world to give to public defenders or to pay court-appointed lawyers, if judges are still a part of the system in the way that they are now in Texas, you still have a fundamental problem. And I think that's really the key. And what was so interesting, too, in reporting the story was to find examples where public defender's offices that existed were not being used as fully as they could be. For instance, the Harris County Juvenile Public Defender's Office. So this is money that's sitting on the table. You know, judges were not appointing these attorneys to cases. They were instead appointing court-appointed attorneys, very overloaded attorneys. When they had salaried lawyers, they could have been giving these clients. And so that suggests there's something else going on, and it's not just about money.
You have to wonder, Texas judges are elected, and while they're not really allowed to go campaign, they still have a campaign war chest, and the people who contribute to those war chests, you wonder if they have a connection to being appointed.
Well, there's certainly, you know, people have pointed out, and my story as well points out, the relationship between campaign contributions and appointments. It's certainly talked about a lot in Harris County especially, and you can see that many of the attorneys who get the most appointments are generous campaign contributors to judges. Again, though, I'm going to say that it's also about more than just money. When I talk to judges, they say they like attorneys that move cases. They like attorneys that dispose quickly of cases. Sometimes that can mean not fighting back very much, not zealously representing their client. So in some ways, that's almost as important as campaign contributions, if not more so, particularly in, you know, according to, you know, reporting I did in Travis County. Judges really wanted to see attorneys who they called efficient, because that matters for their elections too. When people are figuring out who to vote for or people are endorsing judges, they often talk about how quickly does the docket move, how quickly can you dispose of cases. And the reality is, when you have a lawyer that is really fighting for their client, that can slow things down, and that can be one of the things that frustrates some judges.
So they want to have a rocket docket. They don't want attorneys representing clients who are going to be issuing a lot of objections or bringing up a lot of witnesses or making demands, and also hiring investigators. You showed in your article that attorneys who are appointed who do call for investigators may find that they don't get appointed very often.
That's definitely the viewpoint of many that I spoke to, and something that I observed in many cases. So it's a huge problem, and again, that goes back to exactly judges' power over the system. I mean, if you think about it, the judge is deciding, if you're too poor to afford a lawyer, a judge is deciding who your lawyer is going to be, and then he's deciding how much that lawyer is going to get paid to represent you, as well as will that lawyer be appointed an investigator if they request one to investigate your case? Will that lawyer be able to get a DNA test? All of those things, that exact same judge is making those decisions, and it's just an inherent conflict of interest.
So we have this expression that we have equal justice under the law in Texas and across the nation. But if we have a system that if you are dependent upon a court-appointed attorney and you have to have you can't have an investigator, but if you have money and you can hire your own attorney and they can get an investigator, they can get you off your charges, do we actually have two systems of justice in this country?
I think there are definitely two systems of justice. I think there are people that can, you know, either afford a good lawyer or get lucky and they have a good court-appointed lawyer in the rare cases that happens, or they have a public defender who works in an office that is well-resourced and has caseload limits. And then there is everyone else. I think there are absolutely I think that your experience and what happens to your case will differ dramatically depending on the resources and the attitude that your lawyer has. And there are a number of studies, including in Texas and recently even last year in Travis County, that bear that out.
And other states are being sued. New York State has been brought into the courts to defend their system?
Yes, there have been a number of lawsuits about this in a number of states, usually challenging the high caseloads, saying that that is, you know, in violation of the Constitution and the Sixth Amendment and people's right to a lawyer. These cases take a long time to resolve. I think that New York case was settled after 10 years of being in the courts. And so I've not seen cases like that from Texas so far. It's a lot of resources and work to bring those cases, and it costs a lot of money to litigate them. But that has been one method of reform that's been, you know, beneficial to the poor in many states.
But so Gideon versus Wainwright is the legal case out of Florida that actually gave us the you have a right to an attorney for these types of for the indigent, and is that being undermined by not funding it?
I think it absolutely is. I think the problem with the case from the beginning was that, you know, the states, it was left up to states and local jurisdictions how to actually implement that requirement. And that, you know, largely in most states, even today, and especially in Texas, it's the counties that shoulder the burden of funding indigent defense.
So this can be taken on a very local level if pressure is brought to your county commissioners. We're going to take a break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about court-appointed attorneys and justice, and whether or not here on a local level or across the state, what can be done to improve outcomes for the poor who find themselves in front of a judge, and if that judge has too much power in that system. The number again is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Source continues right after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, speaking with Nina Satija. She is an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. Her article, How the Unchecked Power of Judges is Hurting Poor Texans, appears in the September issue of Texas Monthly and in the Texas Tribune. She's writing about how court-appointed attorneys for the indigent, whether or not they're actually getting justice in these courtrooms and why not, and the role that judges play in that. Have you been represented by a court-appointed attorney or someone in your family? Were you able to get, you know, what you thought was appropriate and engaged legal counsel? We want to hear your story. You can be anonymous, 210-614-8980. Nina, I've been on death row and I've talked to people who had court-appointed attorneys represent them, and they feel like those attorneys are actually working against them, not for them, trying to avoid the death penalty.
Well, it's interesting that you say that in terms of working for them. I've heard that from a lot of defendants I've talked to, that they feel like the lawyer is working with the prosecutor. Look, I mean, it's hard to know all the dynamics of what's going on, and certainly there are times when a lawyer tells a defendant they should plead because that is in their best interest. And if they were to take the case to trial, they might end up with a much longer sentence if they lose. But I do think that especially when you have judges being a part of this system, you know, we have a culture of a kind of a boys' club, if you will. I've heard many people use that term in courtrooms, not just in Texas, but across the country, where, you know, there's some back scratching between the judges and the prosecutors and the attorneys. I think that's definitely true. And a lot of defense attorneys, you know, are former prosecutors themselves. A lot of judges are former prosecutors themselves. And so when you have that kind of a system, it's very hard for people to see the defendant as the most important, you know, cog in that wheel and someone that deserves adequate representation, because there's so many other interests that are being represented there.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Adriana. Adriana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Okay, that's not happening. So, Adriana, if you could check in again with our producer, maybe we can try and get you in. Nina, people have compared the system to like a conveyor belt that it's not really about seeking justice. It's about moving people through the court system as fast as possible. And even the defendants feel like that they're just part of, they become a product, and the system is making money off of them, and this is just how it goes. I mean, are they wrong?
You know, I think that they have a point, and I think that a lot of judges and those who work for the court system want to see things move efficiently. That is their most important goal. I'm sure that some will disagree. I'm sure that some court systems will say that's not their primary goal. Their primary goal is justice. I mean, one thing that I'll point out is in the San Mateo County, California, it has one of the oldest systems where they sort of changed indigent defense to get the judges out of the process. And they talked about how they oversee the quality of defense attorneys. How do you rate defense attorneys? There's a whole office that does this now and oversees them and how well they're doing if they represent the poor. And they rate them on things like what kind of activity are they doing out of court? What kind of motions are they filing? Are they communicating with the client? All of these kinds of things that for the client I think are very important. If you look at some of the standards that judges have and how they rate lawyers according to documentation in Texas, it's very different. In Travis County, for instance, it really is, they actually talk about, does the lawyer show up for court on time? You know, let's measure the lawyer based on their efficiency and efficiency alone. There's not a lot of discussion about their out-of-court motions, about what they do outside the courtroom. So that gives you a sense of what's important to judges and the court system and how people are getting represented, and that's important to pay attention to.
Okay, let's go to the phones with Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm listening to this, and yes, she has a point. I've been listed as a felon for 20 years in San Antonio. I'm not a felon. This is due to walking into a courtroom and being given an attorney that I haven't known for all of 5 minutes. I've even had judges tell me that you can't fire this attorney because she's my 12-year friend. I wrote to the Judicial Commission and they opened a case, and that case was thrown out. I mean, this is a big problem. wow, you just have to please excuse me. I've never done this before.
That's
and
right.
This is something that's constantly on my mind. To, you know, I feel like I need to file suit myself. I've almost had to become my own attorney at times, file motions myself.
Got it. Michael, thank you so much for the call. You did great. I'm going to go straight to John because we're short on time. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay. So I was an intern at San Antonio State Hospital, and a lot of these people are mentally ill. They get assigned an attorney, but a lot of the times the attorneys don't even really communicate with them. And I think it has a lot to do with what she was saying about how, like, you know, the caseloads are high and they don't have enough time. And it's like... They're opening up a lot more forensic units, and it's, you know, it seems like they're just making money off of the mentally ill who can, you know, who need to become competent to stand trial.
John, thank you for that. So Nina, in your reporting, did you come across the problem of mental illness with the defendants?
Absolutely, and I'm really glad that a caller mentioned that, and I wish it's something that I could have focused on. In fact, in a lot of jurisdictions where they're talking about reform, including Travis County, it started out with how to deal with the mentally ill and realizing that you've got to do more than just be – I mean, you've got to do more than I think a lot of court-appointed lawyers do for any defendant, but particularly for mentally ill defendants. You have to go beyond the courtroom and helping them. You need social workers. You need to address other problems in their lives beyond the court case that they're facing. So I think that's a huge issue, and it's something that is really driving a lot of reform in a lot of places. In Lubbock County, they've actually created an office, too, where they've tried to get the judges out of the process of indigent defense, and that all started with figuring out how do we deal with mentally ill defendants in Lubbock, and it started with that. So I think that's driving some talk for need for reform in a lot of places.
You think other counties should take a look at what's going on in Lubbock, and they might get some good ideas?
I think a lot of people have seen Lubbock's system as a model. It's still early, and we don't have tons of data yet on how things are going. But Lubbock is a place where the lawyers are now paid per hour. They have caseload limits. I still think they're pretty high, but they're better than a lot of other jurisdictions. The judges really do seem to not be involved in the process anymore. You know, on the other hand, some people think that a public defender's office is really the way to go, not just having an independent office that oversees a lot of private lawyers, as is what they're doing in Lubbock.
Okay, Adriana's back, so we can get there. Adriana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so basically I was involved in a very politically motivated trial. The cameras were in there. The judge was very interested in the cameras. I had a court-appointed lawyer who did not. He advised me to take a plea. I was almost deported because of that, but I was never advised. When I was asking questions, he was yanking my shirt, telling me to be quiet. It was horrible, and I don't understand how they can get away with that. But you know, the judge didn't care. But certainly the appointed lawyer did not care, and it cost me a lot. I ended up with a felony that could have very easily been should have been dismissed had I just been advised to go to trial. So I had a bad experience.
All right, Adriana, thank you for that. Nina, do people end up taking pleas so they can get out of the courtroom, and then that's going to hamper the quality of life?
I think that definitely happens. I think that, you know, Adriana's experience jives with a lot of what I've heard, and then also the other gentleman that called earlier about his experience. And, you know, a lot of people complain about their lawyers, and sometimes justified complaints, sometimes not. It's sometimes hard to sort that through. There's really no one for them to turn to other than the judge. And I've talked to judges who say, look, we don't really have time. Who you know, they're not saying that they actually want to be out of the system because they don't really have the time to pay attention to how good of a job is the lawyer doing on the case. And so that's been one of the arguments for either a public defender's office to help create a better culture of public defense, again, if it's well-resourced and has caseload limits, as well as maybe having an independent office like they have in Lubbock or like they've tried to create in Travis County to oversee lawyers so that you have someone to complain to who will actually pay attention to what you have to say and see if they can at least get in touch with your lawyer and say, hey, have you gotten in touch with the client? They haven't heard from you. You know, most places don't have any kind of entity like that. And so in Texas, it's really left up to the judges, and they don't have the time, and often they don't have the interest in listening to what defendants have to say.
Let's go back to the phones. We just lost our last caller. That was Anthony. So when you say it's up to the judges, now the judges are elected, and so there's an opportunity for people to raise expectations in this area. And this caseload situation, how out of control is that?
I think the caseload situation is definitely out of control. I think that is a fair statement. And if you look at the data, which is what informed my whole story, it's easy to get this data online. You can go to the Texas Indigent Defense Commission website and look up any attorney who you know takes court-appointed cases. You can also look up public defenders in Texas and see how many cases they were paid for or how many cases they took last year and the year before and the year before that. The numbers are incredible. They are very alarming, and they're frankly very disturbing. So caseloads are definitely an issue.
Some of these people are taking so many cases, it's humanly impossible to do everything that they're claiming to do.
That's right, yes. And we've looked at, you know, I mean, for other stories I've done, we've looked at billing reports and things like that, and people have just billed an impossible or said that they've worked an impossible number of hours. And it's just not possible. You know, even if you were to spend all of your time in the courtroom every single day, 12-hour days in the courtroom, when are you out actually investigating cases, you know, talking to clients, filing your motions outside of the courtroom? It's just not feasible.
Nina Satija is an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. Her article, How the Unchecked Power of Judges is Hurting Poor Texans, appears in the September issue of Texas Monthly and with the Texas Tribune. Nina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.